Welcome to Movie Crush, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Mini Crush Monday with Mr. Noel B. and Mr. Chuck B.
Chuck, I had a fright. I gave myself a fright. When I called you on Skype, I looked at the screen and I saw my own face and I thought it was you.
Well, sorry. I don't know. How do I react to that?
Let me rephrase. Not a fright, like hideous, you know. It was just more like staring into the abyss, kind of, and then the abyss staring back, and then you realize you were the abyss all along.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. That's feeling kind of Lovecraftian today.
You dug your way out of that one.
Did I?
Oh, I think so. How is life? How are you feeling? How are you? Are you sick?
No. What do you mean? With the COVIDs?
Yeah. You don't have the COVID, do you?
I don't have the COVIDs. No, I actually got tested before the big crazy spike. Yeah, if anyone's following the news, they know that Georgia is one of the spots that's spiking pretty hard. But I got tested and I was negative. I was one of these drive-through pop-up tests. It was actually at a brewery, which I thought was funny. No, I'm good. I've had my kid for a week. She's good. Everyone's good. My mom's actually coming up in a couple of days, which I know probably isn't recommended, but she's losing her fucking mind, going stir crazy and just needed some company, so she's coming up.
All right.
All moved into the new house. Feeling good about that.
Looks great.
Feeling good about working in my new space and then being able to exit into the house and have it be uncluttered and clean, which is great.
Wonderful.
Yeah, things are good. How about you, man? How's everything with you and your lovely family?
Good. We Ruby turned 5 yesterday, and
I saw that.
It was very sad. You probably saw this on my personal Facebook, but you know, for the past couple of months, you know, and whenever we talked about her birthday, she said she didn't want her birthday because she can't see her friends. And that's not what you expect a 5-year-old to say. So it's been heartbreaking. And all of our friends stepped up, man. And we had the coolest, best birthday ever. Breakfast in bed and then morning presents here at the house. And then we went to we had a bunch of micro parties. So we had we were going to have her schoolmates that she hasn't seen in months and months just drive by and honk and wave, but they got out of the car and the parents like massed and stood way far apart in the front yard. And the kids, you know, you can't keep kids away from each other. And kids were not as worried about because they're not seeing the light of day hardly. So three right. of her schoolmates, like they were playing outside together. And it's like the first time I've seen that in months. It was amazing to see. And meant a lot to her and us. And then, you know, my other friends had this outdoor pool they built, sort of like a PVC and plastic bladder that you can buy, sort of a cheap above ground
sure.
pool. But it's it was great. So she got to swim for the first time this summer. And then my other friends put on a puppet show in their picture window that was tailored for her.
That's
and
awesome.
Did this big chalk sidewalk game for her. And then we went and had a pizza party at our friend's wine shop later in at like, you know, 5 or 6 o'clock in the evening. And it was just great. It was basically a bunch of little micro parties all day long driving around Atlanta. And it was wonderful, wonderful, wonderful.
That sounds pretty magical, Chuck. That's pretty amazing. You were able to pull all that off with a little help from your friends, as the
it
Beatles
was great, man.
Would say. That's great.
Everybody came through.
That's awesome, man. Eden's friend had a birthday, and it's a really close friend of hers who has her mother and sister. They've been being incredibly cautious to the extreme, not leaving the house practically, and you know, not going anywhere, even when things were quote unquote better.
Right.
But she invited us over to have like a King of Pops. If anyone knows King of Pops, it's a local awesome popsicle company, and yeah, we just went over there, and they hadn't seen each other in person in forever, and shared a popsicle in the front yard and just chatted for a while, and wasn't very long, but they took the masks off, and you know, they were eating the popsicle. You can't eat a popsicle in a mask.
Yeah.
So it was really nice. And then she actually had a friend sleep over the other night, which, you know, I don't know, there might be some parents out there frowning upon that, but it was, we're comfortable with their level of quarantine. They're comfortable with our level of quarantine, and everyone's just thirsting for some semblance of normalcy. So the first time she's ever had a sleepover at my house, which was really special. It was pretty awesome, actually.
That's great, dude. I think that there are safe ways to broaden your circle a little bit. And, you know, there's a toll to be paid for not seeing other humans at all either, over, you know, as it's clear that this is going to not be over anytime soon. I think yeah. There are safe ways to see people outdoors and spaced and masked and distanced. And you got to do a little bit of that. You just got to do it the right way.
Yeah. And like I said, I mean, it's all about different people's comfort level, but like I'm comfortable with this family and their level of, you know, dealing with this in a very, you know, cautious way. So having her under my roof and them just being normal, there's no worry that either of them have anything. So that's how we're choosing to deal with it. And of course, that's all run through her mom, their moms, everyone's comfortable with the same stuff. So it's not like anyone's sending out of the loop.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to have to be like that because, you know, DeKalb County is all remote school next year. And Fulton just, I think, announced the same thing. So got to have that interpersonal interaction somehow.
Yeah, what we are doing, Noel, and I've seen this actually as a thing with some other families, is we're doing a little micro school for kindergarten. We've gotten together with three other families, and we have a teacher and a place to do it, which is mainly going to be outdoors unless it's like terrible weather. And we're all signing things and agreeing on protocols for our families and all that stuff. And she's going to be in a little school with three other kids for the year in someone's backyard.
Awesome.
Backyard. And we're lucky that we can do this, you know?
Yeah, no, you are. It's crazy to even talk about, I mean, you know, just how much things have changed in like 6 months, you know, or however long it's been. Time and all that has become a little blurry, but yeah, it's nice to be able to have. I will say this. I have reached out and reconnected with so many old friends that I've never even thought to reconnect with or talk to. I feel more of a sense of community during a lot of this, just even though it's virtual community, than I think I've felt in a long time. Because you probably know, like for work, I was traveling a shit ton to the point where I was kind of burning myself out and it was becoming kind of unpleasant. And I felt a little bit trapped in this loop of like coming and going and then having to pick up the kid and, you know, then dropping her off and then leaving again. And so being able to stand still for a while has made me realize what I really want out of things and what's important. And that's community and support and, like, you know, just kindness and a little bit of the ability to kind of do some self-care. I wasn't doing that. So there's been blessings in disguise with this whole thing. Obviously a lot of awfulness too. So
I love it, man. I have not missed getting on a plane. I'll tell you that. It's been great to be home. I do miss performing live in front of people. Not doing any Stuff You Should Know shows after our first couple this year has been tough because I really miss that and I love it so much. But we miss everybody, and we'll see you in 2022.
Mm-hmm.
Or yep, whenever. Same. That's going to be the last one to come back. So who knows when that's going to be.
Yep.
So Noel, let's move on to some movie stuff.
Of course.
I want to start off with a recommendation. My good friend Andy Ciara, well, here's a little backstory, and a lot of people know this, but for the Stuff You Should Know TV show, we had this band. Well, it was really the two brothers that led the band, the Henry Clay people, do our TV theme song, Joey and Andy Ciara. And they are good friends of mine from way back, just from getting an email from them when they were on the road with Henry Clay people many, many years ago, saying, hey, we love listening to Stuff You Should Know on the Road. We're a traveling indie band. And I went and saw them at the Variety Playhouse here in Atlanta, hung out with them. And that was, geez, man, that was probably 8 or 10 years ago. And we became fast friends, me and Joey and Andy. And they're the best. And we're we're good buds, and we've stayed in touch over the years and seen each other a lot, hung out a lot. They did the Stuff You Should Know theme song, and then they both have studied film since then, and filmmaking and screenwriting at AFI, and Andy wrote his first big movie, that Andy Samberg movie, Palm Springs.
No shit. I've been seeing that blasted everywhere, man. That's awesome.
That's Andy's movie, and it's getting great reviews, and it's a wonderful movie, and it's on Hulu and at drive-ins all over the country. Had a big drive-in release, and I encourage everyone to check out Palm Springs. It's a very, very fun, heartwarming, sweet, strange take on a sort of a familiar plot line, which is a bit of a Groundhog Day kind of thing.
Got it. I will check it out. Been meaning to.
Palm Springs, everybody. And I'm gonna see if I can get both Andy and Joey on at some point for their own respective shows, their own episodes. But I think we're gonna move on, Noel, to just sort of one big thing. These next couple episodes are gonna be a little bit shorter just because we don't have a ton of time today. But Richard Marcil from the Movie Crushers page linked to an article from Mental Floss, and I thought it'd be kind of fun to go over the 35 movies that Roger Ebert really hated. And that is the name of the, and you can follow along if you want on your own home computer, Noel.
Yeah, yeah.
This is from Stacey Conrad from June of 2018. And I think we should just, some of them will be quicker, some of them we might want to chat about, but the first movie on the list that Roger Ebert hated is Armageddon. He said it's a movie that's an assault on the eyes, the ears, the brain, common sense, and the human desire to be entertained. I did not like
but
this movie
Aerosmith
either.
But that Aerosmith song.
Oh, God.
Come on.
So where do you land?
That's all I remember. I don't know, man. Is it Jerry Bruckheimer? Is that who it is? Or is it the other guy?
I mean, Bruckheimer was a producer. I feel like it was a Michael Bay jam, right?
Michael Bay. That's who I'm confusing. Yeah, so Bruckheimer, he didn't ever direct. He was just a producer?
Yeah, producer.
Okay, so it's Bay that's responsible for all those god-awful Transformers movies, right?
Bay.
Yeah, Bay. Not Bay. Not beyond all others. No, wait. But before all else? Is that what Bay stands for? I think it is. B-A-E. This is B-A-Y. It's a thing. It's a meme thing. You never heard someone call you their Bay? Like, it's my Bay. It just means before all other or something like that. No, else. E.
That's
B-A-E.
B-A-O.
So this is B. Yeah. No, it's before all else. B-A-E, Bay. This is not, Michael Bay is not my Bay.
That's dumb.
Yeah, he sucks. He's just, it's bombastic garbage, you know? It makes you feel like you're having a heart attack and a brain aneurysm at the same time, you know? Uh-huh. Like, it's not good. Armageddon, he did The Rock. I liked The Rock, but I haven't seen The Rock in many, many years. But I remember enjoying that one. That's the one where Sean Connery helps Nicolas Cage infiltrate Alcatraz because he's the one man that's ever broken out of Alcatraz, the unescapable prison. But Armageddon was the one about blowing up the meteor, right? They go to the meteor and they got to blow it up because otherwise it'll destroy the earth.
Correct.
And then Aerosmith. Yeah. I didn't like it.
All right. I didn't like it either.
I'm sorry.
The Brown Bunny. We don't even have to talk about that much. That was a movie from, what's his face?
Vincent Gallo.
Yeah. Vincent Gallo. He didn't like that. Jason X, he gave a half a star to. He just said, this sucks on so many levels. So there you have it.
Can I really quickly just read this quote from the Brown Bunny, though? It's just so funny. He says, it is true that I am fat, but one day I will be thin, and he will still be the director of the Brown Bunny. Referring to Vincent Gallo.
That's very funny.
Oh, man. Brutal. Yeah. Jason X is like Friday the 13th in space, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but that sounds about right. Mad Dog Time is his next one. I don't think I know that movie. Do you?
Nor do I. No, I do not.
I've heard Mad Dog and Glory, but I don't know.
That.
Yeah, I don't know Mad Dog Time. It looks pretty bad. Ellen Barkin and it looks like Richard Dreyfuss, maybe? Gabriel Byrne?
Gabriel, that's so funny because he's in the next one. There's some funny things about this list, Chuck, because he gets some things real wrong. He is on the wrong side of history on a handful of these.
Yeah, and I will go ahead and say that the next one is one of those. The Usual Suspects, I think, is one of the good, really good movies of the 1990s.
Yes. 1.5 stars. What's his beef?
I don't know. He just said he didn't care.
Yeah, that's a lazy review, if you ask me. I don't know. Sounds like he wasn't paying attention, if he didn't care. Who knows? Everyone has their own taste, but I just have nothing but love for that movie.
Same here. No, I totally agree. Deuce Bigalow, European Gigolo, 0 stars. I didn't see either one of those because I had no interest whatsoever. But he says the best thing is that it runs for only 75 minutes.
And speaking in my official capacity as a Pulitzer Prize winner, he says, Mr. Schneider, your movie sucks.
It's brutal.
Yeah. Way to flex the Pulitzer there, though. No. I'm like, how come, like what, how did he feel about Male Gigolo? How did he feel about Part 1?
I don't know.
He gave it half a star? He sort of like, you know, I don't know.
I bet you he didn't like it. That would be my guess.
Probably not.
Number 7 is Mr. Magoo, the movie Mr. Magoo.
Starring Leslie Nielsen as the titular Mr. Magoo.
Yeah, that I didn't see. I haven't seen a lot of these, Noel. In fact, most of them. I saw Armageddon, and I saw, I didn't even see The Brown Bunny. I saw, of course, Usual Suspects, but I have not seen any of these hardly.
Yeah, a lot of these are real broad comedies. That sort of seems to be the running. There's some more coming down the list that you know. One of them was your boy Aaron Mankey's favorite film of all time.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
It was his movie.
Okay. So Spice World, he gave half a star to. Don't need to talk about that. Number 9 is Good Luck Chuck. That was the Dane Cook movie when he was relevant. Mm-hmm. Did you ever like him?
Ah, man, it was like bro comedy. It was very much like frat boy kind of broad, you know, comedy. It is funny, though, for some reason in my iTunes library, you know how when you plug your phone into Bluetooth or in a car, it'll automatically play whatever's first in your iTunes library. Somehow I have a Dane Cook stand-up in my iTunes library, and I don't know how it got there. I don't know how it got there, bro. And it'll just play. Oh, and I was like, make it go away.
That's bad. No, you got to get rid of that.
Mm-hmm. I know.
Number 10 is Freddy Got Fingered, another movie I did not see. 0 stars. Yeah. This movie doesn't scrape the bottom of the barrel. This movie isn't the bottom of the barrel. This movie isn't below the bottom of the barrel. This movie doesn't deserve to be mentioned in the same sentence with barrels.
Yeah. That's Tom Green, big screen debut, and I think at one point he like jerks off a horse. That's the part that I remember. Or an elephant. It's an elephant. There's definitely a scene where an elephant ejaculates all over somebody. Somebody famous plays his dad too in the movie.
I think it like was somebody Rip Torn,
very respectable.
I think it was Rip Torn.
I think you're right. Yeah, it is Rip Torn. Absolutely. Yep. Yeah. I think he gets ejaculated upon by an elephant.
Number 11, Corky Romano, half a star. Corky Romano is like a dead zone of comedy. Okay. Did not see that. I got good taste.
Did you see The Dead Zone?
Yeah, sure. I enjoyed that.
Mm-hmm. Christopher Walken, I don't understand the reference. What does he mean, the dead zone of comedy?
Oh, he says like a dead zone of comedy, not the dead zone of comedy.
Okay, my bad. I would take issue with the other interpretation.
Number 12 is the 2000 Charlie's Angels movie. I did see that. It was certainly not good, but I would give it more than half a star. I'd give it 1.5 stars. It had a couple of good parts. Maybe.
You got to think, too, like, a guy like him, he doesn't review, like, every movie, right? You know? I mean, I've always wondered how they pick which ones, you know, big reviewers like this go after. If they're just the big tentpole movies. But, like, he has to have seen a lot of shitty broad comedies in his life. These are maybe just the ones that caught him on a really grumpy day. Or he was just like, enough of this! I will die on this hill about Good Luck Chuck.
Maybe. Number 13 is Mannequin from 1987, half a star. I got to say, Nolan, Mannequin is a pretty bad movie, but it is one of those 80s movies that has a little bit of a soft spot in my heart just because I was a kid when it came out. I'll give it a nostalgia point.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you haven't seen that.
I haven't seen it. No, we've talked about it. That was on my list at one point, I believe, on my holes list. Doesn't it get a little steamy? Is there some steam? Some mannequin steam?
Maybe. Kim Cattrall. Mm. It was not good. But like I said, okay. Nostalgia factors in. Number Fair. 14, Roger Ebert hated Exit to Eden, a movie I did not see as well, but I think that was like a Rosie O'Donnell S&M type of jam.
Well, I mean, she's an undercover cop, and they have to go undercover into some kind of kink club, and she ends up wearing a dominatrix uniform. It just seemed, you know, I think his point is like, you know, you're better than this, Rosie. You're better than this. He calls it a misguided film.
I bet you they get all the stuff wrong too. All the kink stuff. I bet they get totally wrong.
Probably. Yeah, probably so.
You know, play it for dumb laughs.
Let me see. Somebody 15. Pointed out to me a movie called, you ever heard of a movie called Mr. Baseball, Chuck, with Tom Selleck?
Sure.
He doesn't he go to like Japan to play baseball? Yeah. And apparently it just really doesn't hold up. He's very like ragging on Asian people for being short and just really obvious, broad stereotypes kind of. Someone brought that up to me today.
I haven't seen that movie. In fact, I don't even know if I saw it back then, but if it's from that time period and about Tom Selleck going to Japan, I'm sure there are plenty of racist jokes. You know?
Yep.
Number 15, Noel's Hocus Pocus.
Beloved. It's beloved. Yeah. People love Hocus Pocus.
He gave it one star. Yeah, he got that one wrong. It's not a movie I love because it's not my demo, but I certainly recognize it as a beloved, pretty good movie, right?
Yeah. They do I think you could probably classify it as cult. He's probably kind of shitting on it for what people would call camp. And you can only really identify something as camp when time has passed a little bit. Maybe he saw it and was just like, this is just bad and dumb. And then people over time were like, no, it's super campy and goofy and fun. And they do midnight screenings of it around Halloween, like at the Plaza here in Atlanta. Like it's very, very popular.
Yeah, I agree. Number 16, I have been on record as not having seen this, and people think that's weird, but I did not see Tommy Boy. And I've heard a lot of people say they really loved that movie.
It's real dumb, but I love it. It's perfect. It's that perfect pairing of Farley and Spade. You know, they tried to recreate it like a couple more times, like with Black Sheep and maybe one other, but Tommy Boy was the OG. It's good, goofy comedy.
All right. The Village is what you referenced earlier, Aaron Mankey's favorite film. And Ebert has this to say to the movie he gave one star to. Eventually, the secret of those, etc., is revealed. It's a crummy secret about one step up the ladder of narrative originality from It Was All a Dream. And then he says this is pretty funny. When they discover the secret, he says, we want to rewind the film. So we don't know the secret anymore. And then we want to keep rewinding and rewinding until we're back at the beginning and can get up from our seats and walk backward out of the theater and go down the up escalator and watch the money spring from the cash register into our pockets. Just savage.
That's good writing. That is good criticism right there. I love it. He's such a dick.
Man. R.I.P.
Yeah, no, for sure. Sorry. Yeah. Not to malign the dead or anything, you know.
You should see
that guy. No,
Roger Ebert documentary is very good, actually. It's very heartwarming. It's called Life
You
Itself.
Had said that. And he is the critic, probably. You know, there's obviously more influential critics like Pauline Kael and stuff, and like, you know, more academic critics, but he's the one that mainstreamed film criticism. And you got to give him props for that. And still stuck to his guns and, you know, wrote well. He's a good writer, you know, for sure.
I believe it. The Love Guru was number 18. I did not see that. I think that was the Mike Myers thing, right?
Oh, yeah. You know, basically making fun of Hinduism and implying that, like, all, you know, Hindu gurus are in some way like horn dogs that are just trying to, like, get into women's pants. Very problematic. Just not funny either. So, you know. Problematic zero is stars. Okay if it's actually funny. Yeah, zero stars. One star, he says.
Oh, I meant from you.
Oh, from me? I didn't see it. I didn't need to see it. I get it. I don't. I'm fine.
Number
Come
19
at me, internet.
From 1989, She's Out of Control. I remember that movie. If I'm not mistaken, that was from the Monkees, Mickey Dolenz. I think that was his daughter in the lead role in her only big film. He says, She's Out of Control is simultaneously so bizarre and so banal that it's a first. The first movie fabricated entirely from sitcom cliches and plastic lifestyles without reference to any known plane of reality. Wow.
Tony Danza. And then and the woman, the ingenue, is Mickey Dolenz's daughter?
Yeah, I think Tony Danza plays her dad, and he's got like this wild child daughter is what I remember. This is my graduating year from high school, and even then I didn't go see that movie.
What's the name? It's called She's Out of Control. Okay. So I was looking this up, and I actually came upon a German poster, and I know a little German. And I love this. It's called in Germany, Hande weg von meiner Tochter, which means hand wringing from my daughter or something like that. But meine Tochter means daughter.
It's my daughter.
I don't know what Hande weg means. I gotta know. We can move on, but yes. I'll update.
Number 20, Summer School. You know what? Summer School was kind of one of the great 80s movies. Again, not great filmmaking, but a pretty beloved 80s film. Do you have
Hands
that German
off
translation?
My daughter. Hands off my daughter.
That's great.
As opposed to She's Out of Control. Hands off my daughter. I'm Tony Danza.
Meine Tochter.
Meine Tochter. Love it. What's next?
It's great. Clifford. I think that was the movie about a big dog.
No, Clifford is the one there's Clifford the Big Red Dog, but this is Clifford with Martin Short. He's an asshole little man child kid. He's Martin Short, but he plays a little kid and he wants to go to Dinosaur World and he has this little dinosaur toy named Stefan and he's just an asshole. He's just a spoiled little brat kid. And then there's a heartwarming moment where he and Charles Grodin finally see eye to eye after much, consternation.
I totally remember this movie now.
Yeah. It's pretty funny. It's bad.
It's got a 10% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that says it all.
I like Martin Short a lot, though. Martin Short, he can do no wrong to me. He's adorable.
He's great. Well, I mean, I loved him on Saturday Night Live, and then the 80s movie Inner Space is one of my favorite 80s movies. Love that movie.
It's a good one. Here's a question. As podcast people, how does he not have a movie review podcast as Jiminy Glick? We need to make that happen.
Probably because no one
remember
cares
Glick?
Anymore. Yeah, I remember
well,
Glick.
I, all right. Fair enough, Chuck. Thanks for shutting down my dream.
Number 22, and Noel, it's just now occurring to me that there's no way we're going to get two episodes in. So if you agree to this, why don't we just go ahead and make this the only episode we record this week and make it a little larger?
Totes.
We'll just get back in here next week. Does that sound good?
You're not into the retroactive two-parter? We do that shit all the time.
Oh, yeah?
We'll go long and then decide after the fact we're going to make it a two-parter and then do a little punch in. We're like, oops, ran a little long. Here's where we're going to break it for the second. Never mind. We don't have to do that. The Crushers deserve better.
They do deserve better. Let me see. North from 1994. I remember that movie. That was the Rob Reiner movie. And I never saw it. It was supposed to be very bad, though.
You got to read this, though, Chuck. You got to read this.
Read it. You read it.
All right. I hated this movie. Hated, 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 hated this movie. Hated it. Hated every simpering, stupid, vacant, audience-insulting moment of it. Hated the sensibility that thought anyone would like it. Hated the implied insult to the audience by its belief that anyone would be entertained by it.
Man. Wow.
You see what I'm getting at, though, about maybe he's having a bad day occasionally and he's just sick of watching movies?
Maybe.
You know?
Yeah.
There's no way this could have deserved that level of ire. I mean, come on.
It happens. I'm going to read this article. There's a link in this that says Alan Zweibel wrote this film and he got a chance to confront Ebert about the review in a bathroom. And it links to a New Yorker article called Roger and Me about this encounter. And I cannot wait to read this after we record. That's going to be great.
Yep. I got it queued up as well.
Number 23, Noel, is a movie called 200 Cigarettes. Another movie that I did not see.
I liked it. And a lot of people like it. It's sort of lived on as a cult classic. It's about a bunch of folks, get, you know, at a New Year's Eve party.
It's
about like kind of rejuvenation, like, you know, like starting anew, but let's get real fucked up in the meantime. And they're looking for Elvis Costello. Elvis Costello, it plays himself in the movie. And he's like sort of this mythical figure they're searching for. I quite enjoyed it. And I know a lot of people that really like it.
24 is Death to Smoochie. That was the Robin Williams thing that was supposed to be very bad.
Mm-hmm. He gets it right here. It's unpleasant. It's a very unpleasant movie to watch.
Is it?
Mm-hmm. None of the characters are likable.
I'm going to go to bat for this next one a little bit. Number 25 is a movie I have seen called Saving Silverman. He said it's so bad in so many different ways that perhaps you should see it as an example of the lowest slopes of the bell-shaped curve. You know what? Sarah Silverman is not a great movie. It is not some classic comedy. But I got enough laughs out of Steve Zahn and Jack Black and Amanda Pete that I sort of liked it. You know, I'll go ahead and just say it. I sort of liked Saving Silverman.
And isn't there a thing where they're searching for Neil Diamond? Isn't Neil Diamond like a mythical unicorn creature in this movie in the way that Elvis Costello was in 200 Cigarettes?
Well, they're in a Neil Diamond cover band, a tribute band, and they eventually meet Neil Diamond. There are all three Neil Diamond in the tribute band, and they eventually meet him. And it's silly, and it's dumb as shit, but it's, you know, Steve Zahn and Jack Black. Like, I'll take it any day.
Totally. No, I mean, they're both great.
So good. He plays such a good dumb shit. One of the best. All right, 26 Noel, the Jazz Singer from 1980 with Neil Diamond, a movie I did not see.
Not to be confused with the Jazz Singer, like the blackface movie from the 30s, right? Not like a remake or anything, is it?
No, I think it is a remake. I think it's was an updating, if I'm not mistaken.
Why would anyone even do that? That movie is so problematic.
Well, he didn't. He wasn't in blackface in the new one.
I know. Interesting. No, he accuses him of being narcissistic and not a great actor, and that the whole thing was like a sort of an ego project. You know, vanity project is the word I was looking for. I haven't seen it. I'm intrigued though. I like Neil Diamond.
I'm trying to see if this was an update. I mean, I would assume so since it was. Yeah, a 1950. Oh, there have been several. There's a 1927 film, a 1952 film, a 1959 television film, and then the 1980 film. So sort of like Star Is Born, I think.
Star Is Born. I was thinking the same thing. Wild. Yeah.
Number 27 is a movie that we have reviewed on this very, or not reviewed, but one of our guests picked on the show, Ace Ventura: Pet Detective, Noel. A movie that is very silly, but is a classic.
It's great.
Stand
not
by.
Not going to get me to say anything negative about Ace Ventura: Pet Detective.
I'm not trying.
If it wasn't for that movie, no one would use talk out of their asses, you know?
And where would we be?
Mm-hmm.
28, Stop or My Mom Will Shoot. Never saw it.
That's Sylvester Stallone and what's her name from The Golden Girls?
Estelle Getty, yeah.
Estelle Getty, yeah. Sylvester Stallone's like a hardened New York cop, and his mom is a nice little sweet grandma, and they go on adventures. She eventually, you know, has to, you know, bring it. And, yeah, she gets involved in some sort of crime syndicate plot. And I saw that movie in the theaters. I remember zero about the actual plot other than what I just described.
I'm sure that's it. 29, Noel, The Dukes of Hazzard with Johnny Knoxville and... Stifler, right? Wasn't he the other guy?
Stifler. Yeah, he was in it. And wasn't who else was in it? Like wasn't it who played the Daisy Duke? Was it Jessica Simpson? I want to say it was Jessica Simpson.
You were totally right. I remember. I actually did see that movie because as a dumb young 10-year-old and growing up in suburban Atlanta, The Dukes of Hazzard was kind of a great TV show for us, but the remake or whatever, the movie version was not good, and neither was the TV show. If I'm being honest with myself.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's the TV show is, you know, I mean, this is a movie that's driven purely by nostalgia. You know, it's not like there's some redeeming artistic value in the Dukes of Hazzard television series, you know?
Yeah. I will say though that, Willie Nelson as, whatever, who's the grandpa's name or, oh, Uncle Jesse. That was pretty, inspired casting. And this
Uncle
was directed
John Stamos?
By, no, Uncle Jesse.
Well, John Stamos's character in Full House was named Uncle Jesse. I thought some people refer to John Stamos as Uncle Jesse. So I just they don't even remember his real name.
That's funny. When it was directed by one of the Broken Lizard guys, Jay Chandrakasar. Did I pronounce that right?
You probably got close.
Chandrakasar. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm not gonna try to best you on it.
Chandrasekhar. Okay, that's what
now
I
missed. Now you're going backwards now, Chuck.
I'm digging a hole.
Yeah, digging a hole.
Number 30 is the 1998 Godzilla movie. I think, yeah, I definitely saw this one. That was the Matthew Broderick one, I think, and was not very good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember more about the soundtrack than I do about the movie. It had that Puff Daddy featuring Jimmy Page, where it was like Kashmir, but it was Puff Daddy going, "Come with me. I'm going to take you with me. Feel my fire. Feel my call. Lend me your ears. Do-do-do. And they did it on SNL, and like Jimmy Page looked like he had the look on his face like, "I'm collecting a check. I don't give a fuck about any of this."
Oh, that's bad. That is so bad. Winding down here, number 31, The Bucket List. I believe I mentioned this on the show before. That movie was actually written by a fellow PA I worked with in LA, Justin Zackham. And it was one of those deals where every PA is always like, "Yeah, man, I'm going to be director. Or I got a music video I'm doing soon. Or yeah, I'm going to write this movie. I got like Rob Reiner talking to me." And he said that, and he did. He wrote a movie that Rob Reiner directed. And I was like, "Oh, well, son of a bitch. Justin Zackham actually wrote a movie that got released and banned."
I can't believe it. I'm sorry. I'm looking down the... No, I did not see it. I'm just looking down the list and seeing a couple of ones that are very vexing to me.
All right. Let's keep going. And then Dirty Love, number 32.
Don't know this one.
Don't know that one at all. Moving on. Mm-mm. 33, Battlefield Earth. Did not see it, but some call it a cult classic now.
I think I watched the first like 30 minutes. It is incomprehensibly bad. Just the writing and like there's all these terms, you know, because it's obviously folks probably mainly know this is L. Ron Hubbard's big epic work of science fiction.
One of them.
And it was John Travolta's like passion project to bring this to the big screen. John Travolta being a infamous, I guess, Scientology apologist, even though we are pretty sure that they targeted him and were, basically bribing him, blackmailing him because they had dirt on him that he was gay. That's been the rumor for many years, and it really holds true, being that his career has kind of torpedoed. But it's got all these like weird L. Ron Hubbard-isms and like, you know, things that like, who is this movie for? Like it's not good sci-fi. I don't know what it is. You know, that's the problem. And it's because it's for Scientology people.
You know, his wife, Kelly Preston, just passed away after a sort of very secret battle with breast cancer. And, you know, regardless of how you feel about Scientology, she was a mother of children and lost a cancer battle. So that was sad to see.
That is sad.
Number 34, Noel, The Flintstones in Viva Rock Vegas. Didn't see it.
No, I remember the first Flintstones movie I think this didn't even have the same people because the first one had John Goodman as Fred.
That's right.
And the Rick Moranis as Barney. And
great
then
casting.
it had what's her name? Who we were talking about in Exit to Eden with the S&M gear. Rosie O'Donnell was Barney's wife, who was
Betty
Rubble. Yeah, she was Betty.
And the lady from Big was Wilma, I think, right?
Was Wilma, right. And Rob Lowe played the bad guy. No, not Rob Lowe. Sorry, another sexy dude. The guy from Dune and Twin Peaks. What's his name?
Oh, yeah, Kyle MacLachlan.
Kyle MacLachlan plays the bad guy. And then Halle Berry is like a sultry femme fatale. The first one's a lot of fun. A lot of fun. Did not see the second one, but I know they didn't get the same cast back, so that probably did not bode well.
I didn't see either one of them, Noel.
It's okay.
And then finally, number 35, Pink Flamingos, the John Waters film. You know, Pink Flamingos is what it is. Like,
yeah.
Are you going to pan that movie because it's not some great film, or are you going to accept it as what it is, which is a trashy John Waters cult classic?
Yeah, but he even gives this little aside here, which I think is interesting. It almost says what you just said, Chuck, and it doesn't even sound like an insult. He says, note, I am not giving a star rating to Pink Flamingos because stars simply seem not to apply. It should be considered not as a film, but as a fact, or perhaps as an object.
Ooh.
That's kind of cool. That's kind of high-minded, you know, way to think about a movie. I don't know. It sounds to me like he kind of liked it.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you there, Noel. All right, so we're going to wrap up with another post that I put today. And this was, name a movie that almost had it all, but had one element that ruined it. Whether it's a bad casting of an actor or a plot point or kind of anything that was like, man, if this movie had just changed one thing. And by the way, everybody, this is, there are going to be a lot of spoilers in these. So if you hear me mention a movie that you don't want spoiled, then just skip ahead on that part because a lot of these have spoilers. And I think the movie I'm going to pick was, it wasn't so much one element, but the entire third act of that science fiction movie, Sunshine. Do you remember that movie?
Yeah, we talked about this. It sort of turns almost into like a weird slasher movie out of nowhere, kind of. Isn't that sort of the deal? There's like a chase and the bad guys coming after everybody. But that's not what it really was up to that point. It felt like a weird jackknife kind of left turn.
Yeah, I think it was so good through two acts, and it's a Danny Boyle film written by Alex Garland. So all the pieces are sort of there because, you know,
Alex Garland wrote that.
Yeah. He wrote it when
I had no idea. Wow.
Well, I guess he wasn't that young, but, wrote it in his 30s. I think it's kind of one of the first things he did.
That's cool.
Oh, no, actually he wrote 28 Days Later and The Beach. I did not know that.
I did not know either of those. He just came out of left field with Ex Machina as far as I was concerned, which I fucking adore.
Yeah, and he also wrote a movie called Never Let Me Go, which I haven't seen, that Emily said was pretty good.
Cool.
But yeah, Sunshine's going to be mine. You can think on yours unless you know one.
No, I need a minute.
But we'll go with this. Amanda Stiles said Signs. Throughout most of the movie, they never really showed the aliens, which made it really tense. And then you see one walking through the living room in broad daylight at the end. Ruined. Yeah, I didn't like Signs. Did you like it?
It was the one where they were like allergic to water or something.
Yeah, right? It was very contrived, I think. Did not like it.
I remember, you know, the era of M. Night coming out with a new movie every year and him being the twist master. And I really liked Unbreakable. I really liked The Sixth Sense when I was that age. I really liked, that was it. Those are the two. And then I kind of lost interest. I might have just gotten old enough to realize he was a one trick pony and kind of moved on. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Ryan Lee says Phantom Thread, masterfully performed, beautifully shot and scored. But the idea that he'd willingly poison himself to maintain a closeness to a woman he seems to be utterly bored with is insane to me. Loved 99% of the movie, hated the ending. Hated.
I couldn't disagree with this more. I think that's the whole point of the movie, is that he needed to be submissive. It's about a power dynamic. He was bored with everybody, and it was the fact that she did that to him and that he allowed her to do that to him that made him respect her and that made him crave that, because he needed someone to take a firm hand with him because he was such a mama's boy, but also such a control freak, and he needed to be able to let go and lose control. So, I couldn't disagree with that more. I thought the ending was what made the movie for me. That was like the Shyamalan twist that I was not expecting, and I thought it was brilliant. That's just
me. Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah.
Awesome.
I loved it, Noel. Phantom Thread. Great. Like the end. Jim Crawford says this. The Brian Wilson movie, Love and Mercy, a movie I very much liked. This is me talking. But he said, Paul Dano was so good in the role as a younger Brian. John Cusack is the older Brian Wilson, though. No good. He said, I'm sure with some aging makeup, we could have had Paul Dano in both roles. And I tell you what, man, I really like that movie, but I did not buy John Cusack as older Brian Wilson either. I'm with you there, Jim Crawford.
It didn't really register for me as positive or negative. I liked the movie a lot, but I don't remember feeling like any kind of way about John Cusack. But I did feel like Paul Dano was amazing, but I didn't feel the same way about Cusack, but I didn't like hate him or anything. But I think that's totally valid.
Yeah. Let me see here. Luke Connolly says this, Noel, slightly hot take, Lin-Manuel Miranda in the Hamill film. He's creative genius. I have a lot of respect for him, but if he hadn't written the show, he wouldn't be playing Alexander. He's outclassed by everyone else on that stage. His acting took me out of some of the more weighty scenes. I haven't seen that yet.
It's good.
Yeah. I can't wait.
The hype is pretty, I've got a date, an in-person date. Actually, I met somebody on the internet. Crazy thing. Her name is Noelle.
Oh, Jesus.
How weird would that be, Chuck, if I ended up with somebody named Noelle?
If she was secretly a fan and trying to kill you and take your life?
Yeah, you know, that's always a possibility, I suppose.
But hey, if the sex is good.
Willing to roll the dice there, Chuck.
A little Phantom Thread thing going. I gotcha. Oh, let me see. Let's go with Vicky Strickland. I absolutely love Knives Out. The first time watching it, though, Daniel Craig's accent was distracting, just too much for me. But the second time that Vicky watched it was not nearly as distracted. Well, Vicky, I think that was one of the great funny bad accents ever in movies.
Yes. He's like a Foghorn Leghorn.
Yeah, it's great.
Inspector Clouseau. I loved it. I love that movie. So I want to see it again.
Jimmy Kuykendall, one of our oldest friends, says, I know enough has been said about this film, but for me, The Last Jedi was almost perfect with the exception of the casino planet.
Totally agree. That was 1,000,000%.
Yeah.
Real weird. Like it felt like a Disney ride, you know, like it was meaningless. It accomplished nothing. Those rat things were dumb looking.
Yeah. They missed their mark on that one.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see here. Here's another one for Last Jedi. I might as well stay on that from Brian Thomas, one of the top fans. I love Last Jedi, except one thing, and it's this quote. I wish I could put my fist through this whole lousy, beautiful town. I don't remember that line.
What? From Last Jedi?
I don't remember that line.
Put my fist through this lousy, beautiful town?
I don't remember that line. Do you remember that line?
It sounds like something you'd hear in like Chinatown or like some kind of hard-boiled detective movie. You know, that seems very
lousy,
out of character.
Beautiful town. I don't know what that is. Maybe, I don't know. Christopher Rennie, one of our old friends, says, Lincoln, there's a perfect shot of him leaving to go to the Ford's Theater. And that's where the movie should have ended. But it still goes on for 10 minutes too long. Yeah, I tell you what, Christopher, there's nothing that bugs me more than false endings in a movie and dragging that shit out. Stop it, stop it. And I'm looking at you, Tarantino, especially with Django, man. Django had 4 endings.
Totally, yeah. I mean, they needed that big revenge slaughter, you know, with all the blood squibs. I mean, they had all those blood squibs they bought, you know, in bulk. That's they had true. To use them for something.
Didn't want to lose those.
I didn't see Lincoln, Chuck. It doesn't show him getting shot and like falling. They at least leave something to the imagination there, right? Because that would be egregious if they went all in and showed the whole fucking thing.
I honestly, Noel, don't remember because that movie bored me to tears.
Okay, fair enough.
I didn't like Lincoln. I'm on record as saying that it was... It fooled me because I thought it was going to be a movie about Abraham Lincoln's life. And what it was a movie about governmental policy. it bored the shit out of me. Didn't like it. But Daniel Day-Lewis is great. You got to hand it to him. But and it looked great and all that stuff. But yeah, just boring. And I know a lot of people disagree with me, so whatever. That's fine. I can take it. All right, let's do a couple more, Nolan, then get out of here. Tim Langan says, I thought the Joker was perfect, except for the flashbacks that revealed, spoiler again, he was hallucinating about his girlfriend. Should have trusted the audience to figure that out.
I don't disagree with that at all. I think that's true.
I think I agree, too.
I don't think they needed it to be a big aha twisty moment. Because that, you know, that didn't really happen anywhere else, and it just felt a little out of character. I gotta say though, I was talking to some friends playing online video games the other day, and I was just saying, hot take, you guys. We're talking about King of Comedy. I was like, King of Comedy, way better movie than The Joker. And it's not funny really, but out of context like this. But they all got a laugh out of it because it's like they borrow so much from King of Comedy, but just tries to make it like a darker, more dystopian version. That it's. Joker didn't do anything for me outside of his performance, you know?
I think we even mini crushed it. I liked it, but it didn't resonate with me. It's not a movie I've ever wanted to see again, even though I thought it was good. Mm-hmm. That's where
It was definitely competently made, but it was just so much borrowed from King of Comedy, which was just a more clever, nuanced movie. Whereas this one seemed to kind of bludgeon you over the head with it a little bit. And it was also much so borrowed that it was like, what are you doing? Where's the original thought here? You know, I appreciate what they did with a big property and taking that risk and doing something weird with it. That was cool. But
totally.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to finish with this. There's a lot of good stuff on here, though, everyone. You should check out this thread. It's a lot of fun. And maybe we'll pick it up again later. But Noah Hubbard says this, and I have to defend it because it's Jaws, which is my favorite movie. Noah says this, for me, it's Jaws for absolutely no reason that I know of. I cannot stand watching Richard Dreyfuss. Can't put my finger on it, but he creeps me out. I'm sorry, Noah, you're wrong. Richard Dreyfuss is great in that movie. And beloved and wonderful. So I know everyone has their own opinion, but yours is not correct.
What are some other big, good, juicy Dreyfuss roles? Like I like Mr. Holland's Opus when I was a kid. It's very like saccharine, but it's a pretty great movie if memory serves. But what are some other big Dreyfuss vehicles?
Well, I mean, early on, you've got The Goodbye Girl, American Graffiti, Close Encounters. What about
That's
Bob?
Right. That's right, of course.
Stakeout, Always, Down and Out in Beverly Hills, Let It Ride. Mm. Man, and it's funny because Richard Dreyfuss is not a leading man type, yet he managed. It was a time in movie making, The Competition from 1980, that was so good. It's a time where a Richard Dreyfuss could be a leading man, and he didn't have to look like Brad Pitt, you know?
Right, it's true.
In order to do that, so I miss those days when you didn't have to have the best looking person in the world as your lead character.
We're sort of coming back around to that in a little bit, in a few ways. You got your Zach Galifianakis's and Jack Black's's and, you know, mainly comedy types. Or who's another good example of that? Like, Philip Seymour Hoffman, you know, I mean, he was epically.
Yeah, but he never played like romantic leads much.
That's true. That's true. That's a good point.
All right, everyone. Well, we'll just let this one peter out. How about it? Maybe we should just not even speak for the rest of the episode.
What?
It's perfect timing, too, because my phone's about to die.
We've made it so far, Chuck. We've made it so far. This is our longest mini crush ever, maybe.
Yeah, I think so. Well, that's what you do when you don't split them in half. So you and I will get in here next week to cover the next couple of weeks. And
totally.
Thanks for your flexibility, my friend.
You got it, brother. Always a pleasure.
And hang in there and good luck on that date. And it's been nice knowing you. Sorry you're going to get stabbed in your sleep.
Nah, dude. It'll be the big reveal at the end where it turns out that I had phone books stuffed into my shirt.
Right. And everyone listening will find out because next week I'll say, welcome to Movie Crush with me and Noelle.
And she'll be wearing my face.
Oh, what a great way to end. Thanks, buddy. And thanks, you guys, for listening.
See you next time, folks.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.